Live from WBZ Studios on the banks of the Charles River, Scott Brown and Elizabeth Warren. Their first debate, moderated by John Keller. Brought to you by AARP. This is continuing coverage of Campaign 2012. Next on WBZ News Radio 1030.
Live from the WBZ Studios, a Campaign 2012 special. WBZ presents Brown versus Warren, the first debate in the race for U.S. Senate.
Good evening and welcome to the WBZ Massachusetts Senate debate. I'm John Keller, political analyst for WBZ, welcoming our listeners on WBZ News Radio 1030, our viewers online at cbsboston.com and across the nation on C-SPAN, and a special hello to our Spanish-speaking viewers on Univision. Buenas noches. Welcome also to the candidates. They are the incumbent, Scott Brown of Wrentham, a former state senator elected to the U.S. Senate in January of 2010. And the challenger, Elizabeth Warren of Cambridge, a professor at Harvard Law School, who is making her first run for elective office. Before we begin, a brief word about our format. I'll be asking questions formulated by us and by voters who submitted them at cbsboston.com. Each candidate will have 90 seconds to answer the same question so you can compare their answers side by side. They'll take turns going first. When they've each had their turn, we'll begin an open period of rebuttal and debate during which the candidates are free to question and address each other directly. The only hard and fast rules: no talking over each other, no filibustering, and obey your moderator always. And with that, let's begin. And by prior arrangement, Mr. Brown, you'll take the first question first. Before we get into the policy issues that are going to dominate this debate, let's get something out of the way. At times during this race, each of your campaigns has appeared to question the character of your opponent. Is your opponent's character an issue in this race? 90 seconds.
Well, thank you, John. And before I answer that question, I want to thank you for holding this event and obviously WBZ for putting it forth. I want to thank Professor Warren for coming out. I want to thank the viewers and listeners for participating as well. As you know, I'm from Wrentham, have been the senator for 2.5 years. That being said, aside from my marriage to Gail of 26 years and the birth of my kids, being your senator has been the greatest honor I've ever had. And I think character is important. As you know, I think what you're referring to is the fact that Professor Warren claimed that she was a Native American, a person of color. And as you can see, she's not. That being said, she checked the box, and she had an opportunity actually to make a decision throughout her career. When she applied to Penn and Harvard, she checked the box claiming she was a Native American. And, you know, clearly she's not. That being said, I don't know, and neither do the viewers know, whether in fact she got ahead as a result of that checking of the box. But the only way that we'll be able to find that out is to have her release her personnel records, have Harvard release their personnel records, to make sure that she did not have an advantage that others were entitled to. So when you are a United States Senator, you have to pass a test, and that's one of character and honesty and truthfulness. And I believe, and others believe, that she's failed that test.
Mr. Brown, thank you. Ms. Warren, is your opponent's character an issue in the race? 90 seconds.
Well, I was going to say that thank you very much for inviting me here. I'm excited to be here. This is my first time to do anything like this. And Senator Brown, it's good to see you here. I was going to start this by saying that I think that Senator Brown is a nice guy, and that what this race is about the issues, that's what's important. Not when someone says a few good things some of the time, but how someone votes all of the time. Senator Brown wants to raise an issue about my character, then I'll lay it out there. You know, when I was growing up, these are the stories I knew about my heritage. I believed my mother and my father and my aunts and my uncles, and I never asked anybody for any documentation. I don't know any kid who did. But I did know this about my parents, that my mother and dad loved each other very, very much. And they wanted to get married. And my father's family said no, because my mother was part Delaware and part Cherokee. And all of our lives, for my three brothers and me, that was a big part of the separation in our families. But, you know, I never used it. Never used it for getting into college. Never used it for getting into law school. And the people who've hired me for my jobs have all made clear they didn't even know about it until long after I was hired. So I think it's out there what the story is. What I really want this race to be about is about the issues, not about my family, but about the families across the Commonwealth of Massachusetts who are very affected by this race.
Thank you. Rebuttal.
Yes, John, thank you. And first of all, I want to, you're a nice woman, too. And I know you're a good teacher and a hard worker, but this is about character. This is about something that can be answered very easily, folks. All she needs to do is release her personnel records, and she's refused to do so. And I think that speaks volumes and says, I think, the answer that we all know. This is about issues as well. This race clearly is about issues. And when she referenced that I don't vote all the way that they want me to, yes, I'm not going to be voting with the Democrats 100% of the time or the Republicans. I'm the second most bipartisan senator in the United States Senate, and there's no monopoly on good ideas. There are good Democrat ideas and good Republican ideas, and I'm going to go for the good idea regardless of who's associated with it.
Let's get a response.
So let's just be clear about this. This is my family, this is who I am, and it's not going to change. But it's also clear about how I got hired. Charles Freed, who was selected by Ronald Reagan to be the Solicitor General of the United States, the top lawyer, and who has said in print that he voted for Senator Brown, is the person who had headed up the hiring at Harvard. And he said he didn't know about it. Nobody at Harvard knew about it until long after I was hired. The Boston Globe has interviewed more than two dozen people who were involved in hiring through the years, and they've all made it clear. The people who hired me have spoken, and they've been clear about it. I didn't get an advantage because of my background. But I will say this. This is about family. I can't and won't change who I am. I am who I am. So if we're going to talk about character, I think that's really an essential part.
Go ahead,
John, if I may.
Briefly, please.
Thank you, Professor. The only way to set this record straight is for you to release your personnel records. That'll say in great detail whether you check the box to get an advantage and take an advantage away from somebody that would have been entitled to it. And you refuse to release your records, and I think that speaks volumes.
You know, Senator Brown, I think that it has been made clear. The people who hired me are the ones who have said whether or not they even knew about my background. There's nothing else there. The question has been asked and answered. I think the senator just doesn't like the answer.
Okay, I think you both had your piece on that. You can always return to things later in the debate if you want to, but we're going to move on. And this next question, you'll start, Ms. Warren.
Mm-hmm.
We learned today that the Massachusetts economy lost 4,800 jobs in August, and the unemployment rate is on the rise here. Gloria from Norwood submitted this question via CBSBoston.com. How and where will the most new jobs be created next year in Massachusetts, and what will you do in the Senate to spur their creation? 90 seconds.
Well, that's a really great question because jobs is a central issue here. And I think the answer is we have to have both a long-term plan for jobs, which has to do with leveling the playing field so that small businesses have a chance to compete and really get out there and create jobs. But in the short run, we also have work that needs to be done and people who need those jobs. So my view is we should put them to work. That's why I was so surprised when Senator Brown last fall voted against three jobs bills in a row. Jobs bills that would have put 22,000 people to supported 22,000 jobs here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, a jobs bill that would have prevented the layoffs of teachers, firefighters, and police officers all across the Commonwealth, and a jobs bill that would have put 11,000 supported 11,000 jobs, mostly in construction here in Massachusetts, which has been particularly hard hit. You know, we put into jobs bills, we get work done that needs to be done, and that's how we get this economy jump-started. We get people back to work. Those families have paychecks. Those small businesses see more customers coming in. That's how it works. I want to go to Washington to fight for jobs.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. 90 seconds, new jobs in the Commonwealth.
Thank you, John. Appreciate the question. As you know, I've been down there working on jobs, and the three jobs bills that she refers to, with all due respect, would have raised your taxes $450 billion. And it was a bipartisan rejection, political votes put up just to score points so you could talk about it today. And they were rejected by both Democrats and Republicans because they recognized that taking more money out of hardworking businesses and individuals and giving it to the federal government is not a good idea. And I'm not going to be part of that. The jobs bills that I have been working on, John, are very clear. As you know, we passed a bill, the 3% withholding, which is a stealth tax going into effect that would have affected our contractors who are doing work with the federal government. That's gone as a result of my efforts. Excuse me, the new crowdfunding piece of legislation that passed is a new way to actually create jobs. I was over at the Cambridge Innovation Center the other day and saw the new opportunities to create up to $1 million, raise $1 million online, and actually have investors and take that money and parlay it into more and more opportunities for our job creators. The only parts of the president's jobs bill that passed were mine. And as a result of that, we also did, if you remember, the third vote. I know you commented on it. The third vote that I actually took was a jobs bill that got money out the door. And we did it without raising taxes. And that's the key. Professor Warren's proposals, according to the National Federation of Independent Businesses, her tax proposals, taking more money out of your pocketbooks and wallets, would cut 700,000 jobs nationwide.
Okay.
And I'm not going to stand for that.
Thank you. Rebuttal.
So let's talk about those three jobs bills. You know, I just met last week with Richard from Leominster. He's a carpenter, and he's talked about what it's meant, how spotty work has been. Sometimes there's work, and a lot of times there's not. Those were three jobs bills that would have supported jobs here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. And how would they be paid for? They would have been paid for by just a fractional tax on people making more than $1 million a year. These were fully paid for jobs bills. And that's what I really don't understand. When I talk to people here in the Commonwealth who are really struggling, I don't understand how Senator Brown could vote against one jobs bill, another one to protect teachers, firefighters, police officers, and a third one for construction workers. We can put people back to work. We have work that needs to be done. But Senator Brown is lining up with the Republicans to vote no.
Let's get a response.
Well, first of all, John, thank you. Maybe you should tell Richard that the reason that he is not working is because we have this lack of regulatory and tax certainty, and that businesses and individuals are scared right now because of your policies of raising up to $3.4 trillion on the backs of our hardworking citizens. And that's something that the people watching are going to have to pay for. As I said, the National Federation of Independent Businesses said her policies would cut 700,000 jobs, 17,000 here in Massachusetts. And the criticism that you're hearing from Professor Warren and her supporters is that I don't want to raise taxes. Guilty as charged. I'm not going to raise taxes. I'm going to protect the pocketbooks and wallets of everybody listening. If you want someone who's going to spend your tax dollars, give it to Professor Warren. She'll spend them.
Ms. Warren.
So I just want to be clear about this tax number that the senator has come up with. It's just not real. And he's just made up these numbers. But what I do know, now that the senator has raised the question of taxes, is that the senator has voted to let taxes go up on hardworking families. You know, just, what's it been, about 2 or 3 weeks ago, there was a bill in the United States Senate, and what it would do is extend tax cuts for 98% of the families here in Massachusetts and 97% of small businesses. And Senator Brown voted no. Now, why did he vote no? Because there weren't enough tax breaks for the top 2% and the top 3%. For me, this is just an example of whose side do you stand on? Are you holding out? Are you hanging in there for the top 2%? Or are you there to fight for working people?
Let's get a response.
Yeah, John, excuse me. With all due respect, you're wrong. You're misrepresenting my record. And the only person in this race who is hurting the middle class and wants to raise taxes is Professor Warren, because she said that she would not have supported President Obama's compromise bill that not only kept taxes low for everybody for the last 2 years, but also took care of unemployment benefits. She said she would not have supported that because of the increases in the fact that we didn't tax more the high income earners. So she would have been the one actually taxing our middle class people. Once again, this is about 700,000 jobs. I didn't make those numbers up. And the tax of $3.4 trillion, these are all things that you have said. You want another trillion in Social Security, small businesses, okay. $9 billion. We could go on.
Let's get a response then.
So I'm sorry, but these are made up numbers, Senator Brown. But here's what matters. We know how Senator Brown voted. And he isn't talking about the bill that he voted on that would have raised, that will permit taxes to go up for 98% of the families here in the Commonwealth and 97% of small businesses. But here's an important point, John. Just last Friday, Senator Brown went on the radio, and when asked, if it comes down to it, and the question is, extend tax breaks so taxes don't go up for 98% of families, or vote no and let them go up because there aren't enough breaks for the top 2%, how will you vote? Senator Brown said, let me make this crystal clear. I will vote to let taxes go up for everyone. Now, I want to say, I'll make it crystal clear. I will not vote to increase taxes on working families. Not ever.
A brief final word, then I'm going to move on.
Thank you, John. Well, this is an important issue, so I appreciate the opportunity. Bottom line is what she's referring to is the fact that we already have a tremendous amount of tax revenue in Washington right now. When she's talking about raising taxes and the fact that I'm not going to raise them, I'm not going to raise taxes on our job creators, those small and medium-sized businesses, those sub-S corporations and others who pass through ordinary income and are considered the so-called wealthy. I'm going to fight for every taxpayer. So once again, her criticism of me is that I'm not going to raise taxes, and that's an accurate criticism.
All right, I will give you just a brief moment.
So I just want to be clear on what Senator Brown has just said. He has said he will defend the top 2% and top 3% so that they don't have to go back to the tax rates of the Clinton years, and he will hold the other 98% of families hostage. If there's not tax breaks for those at the top, then he says no tax breaks for anyone. Okay. That would cost American families $2.1 trillion. We can't do that to hardworking, middle-class, working-class families. Okay. We can't do that for small businesses.
I do want to move on.
John, if I may.
Very briefly, please.
Very briefly. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce said Professor Warren's tax policies and her approach to them are the greatest threat to free enterprise. The NFIB said her tax policies will cut 700,000 jobs, 17,000 in Massachusetts. These are independent groups who have analyzed and pointed this out. I'm going to protect the hardworking men and women, the job creators, the people who are getting up in the middle of the night and creating jobs and protecting those interests.
That was about 15 seconds. You take the same and then we're moving on.
All right. So I think the point here is the Chamber of Commerce hasn't talked about my particular proposals. What I'm talking about here is how Scott Brown has already voted, and also talking about what he said in his own voice last week he wanted to make crystal clear, and that is he would let taxes go up for 98% of families in order to protect tax breaks for the top 2%. I wouldn't do that.
Okay, we're going to stay on economic policy, and again, you can return to these topics as the debate wears on, and you'll start here, Mr. Brown. This coming, bless you.
Thank you,
this coming New Year's Day may not be a happy one if nothing is done to steer us away from the so-called fiscal cliff, which includes mandatory budget cuts that could cost Massachusetts close to 40,000 jobs in defense-related industries alone. Now, you two have argued quite a bit over tax policy, including just now, but I don't think anyone argues that tax policy alone will forestall those cuts. Correct me if I'm wrong, I'm sure you will. What other specific ideas do you have for avoiding this economic hit? 90 seconds.
Thank you, John. Obviously, I call it Taxmageddon. We have the expiring tax cuts that have been in place for 12 years now. We also have sequestration. We have a lot of the debt ceiling is coming up. There's just that complete lack of regulatory and tax certainty, and people are definitely hurting, and they're very scared. There's many things we can do. Obviously, we should be doing it right now. While we were sitting there today, we should have been working on these things. I called when we were last month and a half on break. We should be working on this right now, stepping back from sequestration, looking at a way to reform our tax code, looking how we do military spending, the waste, fraud, and abuse, looking at our corporate tax code and reducing corporate tax rates to make us more competitive, because as many of you know, we have the highest corporate tax rate in the industrialized world. We can't continue to spend and spend and spend our way out of this. Now, the difference between me and Professor Warren is that she wants to raise taxes. She can argue and step back from her comments, but everything that we have and everything the NFIB and others have are reflecting on her comments on $3.4 trillion of new taxes. In addition to that, the NFIB, as I said, 700,000 jobs will be lost. The Chamber of Commerce, the greatest threat to free enterprise. And the bottom line here, John, and the thing that's most important, the only way the only way we're going to get this done is to actually work together in a truly bipartisan manner. And I'm the only one in this room right now who's going to be doing that. Being the second most bipartisan senator right now, I've been doing it since I got there.
Thank you, Ms. Warren. Ideas for avoiding the cliff.
So I think this is a really important time for us. We do have to avoid the cliff. But it's going to take a balanced approach. And this is where we see a big difference between Senator Brown and myself. I believe we need to make cuts. We need to make cuts in agriculture subsidies. We need to make cuts in our defense budget, targeted cuts. We need to end the war in Afghanistan. That's $2 billion a week. We need to cut fraud and abuse out of the system. But we also need to ask others to pay their fair share. So, for example, we should not be subsidizing big oil. Senator Brown voted to protect billions of dollars in subsidies for big oil companies. They made $137 billion in profits last year. I believe that billionaires should pay taxes at least at the same rate that their secretaries do. Senator Brown voted against that. And Senator Brown has said he will permit the taxes to rise for 98% of the families here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, 97% of small businesses, unless there are tax breaks for those at the very top. So here's how I see this. This is really about taking a balanced approach. It's a serious problem, and we've got to get serious about it. And if we're not willing to do both, then it's just more of the same, more gridlock in Washington and more danger for our economy and most of all for our families.
Thank you. Rebuttal.
Thank you, John. We have a thing in Massachusetts. We have an opportunity in Massachusetts for people who want to pay their fair share and actually pay more than their fair share. They can check a box. And Professor Warren, who's always taking as the first approach, raising taxes, placing blame, raising taxes. And she had an opportunity to check another box, and that was to pay more in Massachusetts income tax, and she chose not to do that. And it's usually the ones actually who are yelling the loudest about, you know, paying more that actually don't do their fair share. That being said, with regard to oil companies, listen, I'm no friend to big oil. I'm a friend to the motorists. I'm not sure if you've been to the pumps lately, folks, but $4 a gallon. It took about $70 to fill up the truck the other day. If we want to talk about subsidies and loopholes and deductions, let's have that conversation. I've already voted to close the ethanol subsidy. There's others like that, so let's do it. Let's have that conversation. But the key is to do it together, truly in a bipartisan manner.
All right, rebuttal.
This is, again, how Senator Brown has already voted. The oil industry, the Big Five, made $137 billion in profits last year, and Senator Brown voted that taxpayers would continue to subsidize them to the tune of billions of dollars a year. I just think that's wrong, and I wouldn't do that. Same sort of thing on the Buffett rule, that billionaires are paying at tax rates lower than their secretaries. I think that's just wrong. Senator Brown says, no, it's okay with him, and he protects every one of those loopholes for the billionaires, and he's willing to let taxes go up for our families. You know, this is serious. This is how the senator has voted. And it's not in the interests of working families here in Massachusetts, not in the interests of small businesses. I want to go to Washington to do better than that.
Response.
John... What she fails to point out that the oil votes and our energy producers, those are rejected in a bipartisan manner. Both Democrats and Republicans rejected those approaches because they recognize in the middle of a 3.5-year recession, with the high cost of energy right now, people are paying more at the pump, more than double. We're also, imagine this winter, folks, when you're paying that oil bill, it's going to be skyrocketing. So to do something right now and change the policy in the middle of a 3-year recession, in the middle of our tourist season, it's not the proper approach. If you want to have that comprehensive discussion, then let's do it right now. I've already voted to close the ethanol subsidy. There are others like that. But to say that we're going to the first answer every time, well, you know, she's obsessed with raising taxes.
Response.
No, I'm concerned about how the senator has voted. And he has voted that billions of dollars of your tax money should go to the oil industry. They're already making big profits. That's not where taxpayer money should go. This is really about how we're going to solve our financial problems. And giving breaks to those at the top, to those that are already making billions of dollars in profits, that's not how we solve our financial problems. That's not how we get this economy started again. This is a real difference between the senator and me. This is really about whose side you stand on. And He's made it clear. He stands with subsidies for the oil companies. He stands for breaks for the billionaires. He stands for the top folks getting special deals. I'm out there for working families and small businesses. That's why I'm in this race.
Final thoughts?
Yeah, John. There's only one person in this race who is not willing to raise taxes, and the criticisms have that I don't want to take more and more of your tax money, especially if you're a business owner, and put it in a piggy bank and give it to Professor Warren to bring to Washington to spend. There is a spending problem in Washington, D.C. I see it each and every day. We waste hundreds of billions of dollars of your tax money. You've heard about the doctor in Texas, $300 million of Medicare fraud. And you want to talk about energy policy? I think that should be a discussion we can have, because wind, solar, nuclear, hydro, geothermal, coal, siting, permitting. We need an all-the-above approach, not a none-of-the-above approach, where Professor Warren's looking at solar and wind as the solution. We're in an energy crisis right now, in that people are paying so much at the pump. They're going to be paying so much this winter. To change the policy and start finger-pointing us versus them, the haves and the have-nots, we need to work on it together, John.
Ms. Warren.
You know, I just think we have to be really clear about what's involved in our economic proposals. Senator Brown and I both submitted our economic proposals to the Boston Globe. The Boston Globe gave them to independent economic analysts. And what they discovered was that my approach, which is balanced, is 67% more effective at cutting the deficit than Senator Brown's approach. We can't get there the way that Senator Brown suggests. We just can't do this by cutting more. What he's really saying is protect breaks for those right at the very top, and then leave it to working families to pick up the pieces. We can't do that here in Massachusetts. We can't do that here in America.
Speaking of breaks, we have to take one. 10 seconds each. Go ahead.
Yeah, John, thank you. The Boston Globe, listen, let's get rid of the myth that Professor Warren is a tax cutter and a fiscal conservative. I've never voted for a tax increase. I'm trying to protect your pocketbooks and wallets. There's only one person who wants to spend your hard-earned money, and that's Professor Warren, if you send it to Washington.
And 10 for you.
You know, I'm looking at his votes. I'm looking at independent economic analysis. It shows that I'm 67% more effective at cutting the deficit. Why? Because I think we really have to get serious, and that means a balanced approach.
Candidates, thank you. We'll take a break, have a sip of water, relax, and when we continue, we'll talk about one of the most important votes any U.S. senator has to take when the Massachusetts Senate debate continues in a moment. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Massachusetts Senate debate from the WBZ studios in Boston. Many viewers, Mr. Brown, Ms. Warren, wrote in at cbsboston.com asking questions about abortion rights. And I'd like to expand on that issue in this way. And you'll go first here, Ms. Warren. The current Supreme Court is one of the oldest in the past century in terms of the average age of the justices. And it's entirely likely that whoever wins this election will be voting on the confirmation of multiple nominees to the court. Would you ever vote for a Supreme Court nominee who opposed the abortion rights guarantee of Roe v. Wade? And would you ever apply any other litmus test to a judicial nominee? 90 seconds, please.
I would not, and I don't regard it as a litmus test. The way I see this is that Roe versus Wade is settled law. Women should be able to count on this. And I'm very concerned about how Senator Brown has already voted. When Elena Kagan came up, she was a pro-choice woman who had been Solicitor General of the United States, America's top lawyer. And when she was nominated to the United States Supreme Court, you know, she's from here in Massachusetts. I was really surprised when Senator Brown voted against her. You know, this really may be a race for control of the Senate, and the Supreme Court may very well hang in the balance.
Thank you. Mr. Brown, 90 seconds.
John, thank you for that question. I'm sorry I didn't vote for your boss. I know that you and Justice Kagan are very close. There is a litmus test for me, and that test is a judge has to have, obviously, good judicial character, has to have a good temperament, and actually has to have some courtroom or judicial experience, and that was one of the reasons I did not vote for Justice Kagan, and I wish her well. I hope she proves me wrong. That being said, when it comes to your question about protecting women's rights, listen, I've been fighting for women's rights since I was 6 years old, since I had to battle when my mom was being abused by one of my stepfathers. And I've been fighting as a teenager in the same way, protecting us from our abusive stepfather. So I've been fighting for women for a long, long time. And on that, I will make sure that if somebody is going to try, a judge is up there, and they've made it very clear that they're going to try to change Roe v. Wade, I will oppose that judge. Listen, we're both pro-choice. I'm a moderate pro-choice Republican. I always have been. Been working on the Violence Against Women Act, allowing women in combat. If women are raped in the military, I want to make sure that they get the care and coverages that they deserve. So, you know, we agree on those issues, and I'm glad for it.
Rebuttal.
You know, once again, I think it's important to talk about the senator's record. Senator Brown has taken some good votes, absolutely. But Senator Brown has also voted against equal pay for equal work. Senator Brown is someone who jumped out there and co-sponsored a bill to block, potentially block, insurance coverage for birth control. And Senator Brown is someone who voted in his only chance he's had against a pro-choice woman. You know, Senator Brown has been endorsed by not only pro-choice, he's been endorsed by, what is it, anti-choice groups. And I don't quite understand this. I guess the way I see this is the women in Massachusetts deserve a senator they can count on, not some of the time, but a senator they can count on all of the time.
Response.
Yeah, thank you. You know, you should stop scaring women, Professor, because I've been fighting for women since I was 6 years old, as I said. And the things that you're referring to, listen, I'm going to fight for the rights of Catholics to practice their faith. I'm not going to pit women against their church and their faith. And I want to have people to have contraception care. I have a house full of women, my wife and two daughters, and I've been fighting for that since I was a state rep and state senator. I'm going to continue to make sure that they have that care and coverage. But I'm not going to pit women against their church and the faith and allow, I have the same position as Senator Kennedy in providing a conscience exemption that allows Catholics in particular, churches, hospitals, healthcare facilities that practice faith to have that ability to not provide certain care and coverages.
Further comment. Go.
Well, first, I didn't hear Senator Brown explaining why it is that he voted against equal pay for equal work. But let's talk about
I ran out of time. I'll do it in a minute.
Go ahead.
But let's talk about the Blunt Amendment that Senator Brown was a co-sponsor. It wasn't about a religious freedom question. The president had already resolved that and protected Catholic institutions. What this was really about is the bill itself says that any insurance company or any employer can raise any vague moral objection to covering any preventive services, including birth control. This was really an open invitation to say to employers of any stripe, to say to insurance companies, you can knock out birth control coverage for women. That's what the Blunt Amendment says, and Senator Brown not only voted for it, he was a co-sponsor. He got out there and fought for it.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, once again, Professor, you have to stop scaring women. That's absolutely not true, and that's an incorrect characterization of the Blunt Amendment. It protects people of faith. It's the same thing that Senator Kennedy fought to protect people of faith so they have a conscience exemption, and we did it in Massachusetts. We, in our health care bill that I voted for and worked on, we actually protect women, allow them to get the care and coverages that they deserve, and I agree with. And we also protected the churches, hospitals, and people of faith who want to practice their faith. Now, I'm going to run out of time, so I'm going to have to come back on the fair pay for women. Listen, I have a house full of women, John, and you know them, and of course I want them to get fair pay, but when the Boston Globe and the National Federation of, and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce agree, you know, right idea, but the wrong bill, I'm not going to give a Christmas, early Christmas for the plaintiff's lawyers to go into businesses and make sure that they over-regulate our businesses and kill jobs. So I agree with the Globe. I hate to say it, but I agree with the Globe.
Response.
No, this was equal pay for equal work, and Senator Brown voted against it. But on the Blunt Amendment, let's just be clear about the language in the Blunt Amendment. It doesn't say religious, and it doesn't talk about a religious exemption. It talks about any vague moral objection, and it's employers and insurance companies. I don't think that's what Senator Kennedy fought for. And I think it's inappropriate for Senator Brown to characterize Senator Kennedy's work in that way. Senator Kennedy got out there and fought for women's access to a full range of health care services. And that's what I want to do as well.
Go ahead.
Yeah, John, listen, we're both pro-choice. We both support Roe v. Wade. And she's wrong. I'm going to make sure that Catholics are not pitted against their faith, number one. Number two, on the women's rights in terms of fair pay, we have laws already on the books. Lilly Ledbetter, which is something I would have supported had I been there, is already in effect. We need to make sure it's in effect even more. We already have causes of action that anyone who feels they're discriminated against can bring causes of action. That being said, when the Boston Globe and the Chamber of Commerce say, you know, right idea, but the wrong bill, I agree with them. We can do it better. I'm not going to allow plaintiffs' lawyers to have an early Christmas present and go into businesses and take more of their hard-earned money.
Okay, briefly now, because I want to move on.
Senator Brown can say all he wants, but he has voted. He voted against equal pay for equal work. He was a co-sponsor of the Blunt Amendment. He cannot back off from how he's voted. Women need someone they can depend on, not some of the time, but all of the time.
Let's move on to our next question. You'll go first here, Mr. Brown. Again, a crucial vote that any senator will cast. Under what circumstances would you vote to authorize American military intervention in the affairs of another country, and does our involvement in Afghanistan fit your criteria or not? 90 seconds.
Well, John, thank you for that question. As you know, I'm a colonel still serving. I'm 32 years. I'm working in the Pentagon now, and it's something that I think about on a daily basis, having an opportunity to be on armed services. I'm one of the ranking members on the Armed Services Committee, Homeland and Veterans. And these are things that I think about on a very regular basis. And obviously, when we send our men and women off to war, that's the biggest decision and the toughest decision that any president can make. So I supported the president, President Obama, obviously, in his surge in Afghanistan, and I support his withdrawal. I have a little question on the date because I think it's giving our enemies an opportunity to really kind of, you know, pick us off one by one, and that's not appropriate. Any time that we're sending people off to war, we need to make sure that a few things are in play, that our national interests are at stake. And what happened most recently in Libya and other countries, and what's happening in Iran, there's a lot of trouble throughout the world. And we need to make sure that whatever we do, that we're involved in the process, that the president comes to Congress, lays out what the groundwork is. We have a full understanding as to why we're doing it, and make sure that we go forward and do it together to unify this country, because we are in trouble. There's a lot of things happening overseas that are really unsettling right now, as you know. And I know I'm running out of time, so I'll probably come back if that's all right.
Thank you. Criteria for military intervention and Afghanistan. 90 seconds.
So thank you, John. This is a question that's very personal for me. You know, all three of my brothers served in the military. My oldest brother was career military, 288 combat missions in Vietnam. And I know what families do when somebody is deployed overseas. It's really tough on everyone. Our military is just amazing. They're strong. They're resourceful. They get anything done that we ask them to do. But that means we have to be really careful about when we ask them. We ask them when our interests are threatened anywhere around the globe, when we see direct threats, when we have a plan, not only a plan to invade, but a plan for how we're going to take it forward, and then a plan for how it is we're going to exit. We've got to have the whole plan when we get out there. You know, I do want to put in one plug, though, for the approach used by Secretary Clinton. She's advanced the idea of using smart power so that we use defense, we use development, we use diplomacy, we use all the tools in the toolbox, that it is the best way to keep our country safe. I support President Obama. I want him to stay on as commander-in-chief. And I support Secretary Clinton in how she's helped us around the world.
Thank you. Rebuttal.
First of all, I want to thank your brothers for their service. When I heard that your brother had all those missions, it's really amazing. I'd love to have an opportunity to speak to him about it, so please convey those thoughts to me. When you talk about this issue, however, we can't have a nuanced approach, and that's the key. And Professor Warren has said when dealing with Iran, we should have a nuanced approach. And that's something that Iran doesn't understand. President Obama understood that in the beginning. He's obviously, you know, drawn a harder line, and that's a good thing. Because right now, our biggest challenge over there for our friend Israel is Iran and making sure that they don't get a nuclear weapon. So I'm proud, even today, well, when we get back tomorrow, we're going to be working on another resolution to draw that line in the sand and let Iran know where we stand, number one. We already did the sanctions bills. I was a co-sponsor of that. We did the effort to destabilize their currency and their central bank. We need to do more, but we need to do it with our allies, and we need to do it very, very quickly.
Response.
So I just want to say, I think that with Iran, it's very clear. We cannot have a nuclear Iran. And I think that President Obama has done a really first-rate job of getting out there, using the tools in the toolbox, working with other countries to try to bring really effective sanctions against Iran, but also making it clear he's taking nothing off the table. That's the way to go into negotiations. That's the best way to work with our ally Israel and make sure that we are protecting Israel. But I want to say this. I'm still working to have President Obama be the commander in chief, not Mitt Romney.
Well, first of all, John, thank you. I agree with you again. It's amazing. I think Secretary Clinton's doing a great job. I've told her that, and I think she's really a bright star in that administration, and I appreciate all of her hard work, especially with what's been happening in Libya and throughout that region. She's a tireless worker. That being said, Israel is our greatest ally in that region, one of our strongest in the world, and I've encouraged the president to actually meet with the prime minister to make sure that they can actually communicate, because I can tell you, I visited Israel. I can the amount of stress that that country is under, there's nobody in the United States Senate, Senator Kirk, Senator Lieberman, and I, and a bunch of other folks are making that a top priority to make sure that Iran does not get nuclear weapons. We cannot have a nuanced approach, as Professor Warren has said in the past. And that's another big difference between...
Response, please.
You know, I think on the question of Israel, we have an unbroken friendship with Israel. We have a very special relationship with Israel. And Israel's safety and survival in the United States is of utmost importance to us. It is important because we need an ally in that region that is democratic and one that is committed to the rule of law. And I think we all recognize the risks that Israel faces. There has been a bipartisan approach. It has worked through Democratic and Republican administrations, not something that should be politicized. But what this is really about is who you think should be the commander in chief. I'm out there supporting President Obama. I want to see him stay as commander in chief. I want to continue to work with him.
All right. I'm going to move on to our next question. And you'll start here, Ms. Warren. Academic researchers report that the U.S. has more than 100,000 janitors with college degrees and 16,000 degree-holding parking lot attendants. Evidence, some say, that not everyone should be going to costly conventional colleges. Do you agree or disagree with that? And what, if any, ideas for higher ed reform do you have?
Well, let's start with this part of it, and that is that... When we see people who have college diplomas, who have jobs that don't require college diplomas, sometimes that's because we have an economy that's not yet strong, and we're not producing enough growth. This is in part because we haven't been making the investments in our future. But I want to be clear about this. I meet kids all across the Commonwealth of Massachusetts who have done everything we asked them to do. They work hard, they get out there, they get their diplomas. And then, like the kid I met in Worcester just a few weeks ago, he said, now I'm $54,000 in debt. I can't find a job. I've moved back in with my mother and dad. And I'm starting to run out of hope. That can't be the kind of economy we build. The way I see this, we need better educated workforce. We need people who are educated in science, in technology, in engineering, in mathematics. We need people, a well-educated workforce, so that we can build a strong future. This is how we build a future in America. The notion that we should head in some other direction, I think, is wrong. And I think this is about priorities. Making the right investments. Instead of investing billions of dollars in subsidies for big oil, I say we should be investing that in educating our kids.
Thank you, Mr. Brown.
Thank you.
Seconds.
Thank you, John. I think what you're asking is the high cost of education. Education, having a daughter that just graduated and another one that graduated a couple of years ago, I understand, obviously, the high cost of education, as many of you listening and watching does. But what's the driving factor of education? Driving factor is administrative costs and salaries. And Professor Warren and her husband make almost $750,000. And Professor Warren, in her instance, teaches one class to make almost over $300,000. That being said, in addition to the zero-interest loan that she has from Harvard, in addition to the housing and other perks, no wonder costs are high. So I filed a bill that would allow for transparency at colleges and universities to make sure that we all know what we're paying when we write that check. That also being said, that's why I was happy to make sure that we had kept student loans low on the subsidized student loans. What was Professor Warren's first action and an initial comment on that? Let's raise taxes on our small business owners to the tune of $6 billion. I chose to draw a line in the sand, make sure we could work it out. And you know what, John? We did that. We passed a bill that didn't raise taxes on our small business owners, saved them $6 billion so they could invest it and hire and grow and expand. And that's another difference. The first thing every single time is to raise taxes. And that's the number one criticism she has of me, is that I don't want to raise taxes.
Rebuttal.
So, you know, my first teaching job in law was I made $18,070. And I'm proud of the fact that I've made it to one of the top spots in teaching. But I know what this is really about. This is really about public universities, kids' access. You know, I went to a public university, and I'll date myself a little bit here. I paid $50 a semester at a commuter college in order to get my college diploma. How could you do that at $50? Because back then, America was investing in its kids, and it was investing in public education, creating opportunities for everyone. You know, I feel like I've lived the American dream. I'm in this race because I want other kids to have a chance to live the American dream. Senator Brown talks about raising interest rates on student loans. And you know how it would have been paid for? By closing a loophole used by millionaires and billionaires. This wasn't a small business tax. This was keeping interest rates low for students by closing a loophole. And Senator Brown, who's out there protecting every loophole for the big guys, said no.
Let's get a response.
Thank you, John. Once again, she's misrepresenting a vote, and she's not telling you the truth. This was a tax, a direct tax, $6 billion on the backs of our sub-S corporations, our small business owners. So if you're a small business owner, a sub-S in particular, the closing of the loophole was to take more of your money, put it in her piggy bank so she could take it to Washington. We drew a line in the sand collectively, and in a bipartisan way, we put that through by tweaking some federal programs, no additional cost to the taxpayers. Not only did we do that, we actually passed flood insurance for 5 years for those folks who are having in our flood zones. And we also put out a bipartisan bicameral bill, a highway bill that to create jobs, as she's referenced. So we got three for one. Had she had it her way, she would have raised taxes on you, the subchapter S corporation owners.
Go ahead.
Well, Senator Brown is right. He did draw a line in the sand, and it was to protect what the IRS called a giant loophole, a big loophole. He said it's more important to protect a loophole used mostly by millionaires and billionaires than it is to help our kids. And so that's what it came down to. There had to be some other way to pay for it, because this goes back to this same basic question. Whose side do you stand on? And when we look at the votes, where Senator Brown is always standing is right over there with the millionaires, with the billionaires, with the big companies, with the big oil companies saying, I want to protect special breaks for them. And let it fall wherever it falls on the rest of working families.
Go ahead.
No, excuse me. This is important. You're misrepresenting. It's subchapter S corporations that are not millionaires and billionaires, okay, number one. And when you talk about whose side you're on, I'm on the taxpayer's side. You had a choice to make in your career, and you chose to side with one of the biggest corporations in the United States, Travelers Insurance. When you worked to prohibit people who got asbestos poison, I hope all of the asbestos union workers are watching right now, she helped Travelers deny those benefits for asbestos poisoning, made over $250,000 in an effort to protect big corporations. There's only one person in this debate right now, John, who's protecting corporations, and she has a history of it.
Response.
You know, I've been out there working for families. I've been out there working for people who've been injured by big corporations. I've been out there working for people who've been injured by asbestos. I've been doing that for years and years and years. That's why I want to go to Washington. I want to go to Washington to fight for working families. I want to go to Washington to fight for small businesses. I'm not a professional politician. That's why I'm in this race.
Briefly.
John, with all due respect, she had a choice, and she didn't fight for the victims. She didn't fight for the small person. You fought for the corporations. The corporations paid you $225,000, give or take $1,000 here and there. And you denied, through your efforts, you denied people who had asbestos poisoning their benefits. And so you're talking about fighting for the little guy. You made a choice. You fought for the biggest corporation, the biggest insurance company in our country.
I'm going to give you the final word on this.
It's just not true. Oh. The Boston Globe has looked at this. They've written about it. And it's all clear. I've been out there for working families. I've been out there for working people. I'm not in this because I'm a professional politician. I'm there to fight for working people.
All right, John, you're going to ask the asbestos victims if they've gotten their money. Because of her efforts, they did not get their money. And these people who were poisoned, she stuck up for travelers, made that choice. So it is about whose side you're on. I'm glad you brought that up.
Go ahead, 10 seconds.
It's very much about whose side you're on. And the facts speak for themselves.
Yes, they do.
I've been out there for working people. Senator Brown just doesn't want to have to talk about his votes.
All right, I'm going to move on to what will probably be our final question here, because time is wasting here. You'll start here, Mr. Brown. Here's one from Emily in Norton via CBSBoston.com. Do you believe climate change is real? And if so, what should the federal government be doing about it? 90 seconds,
yes,
please.
Yes, I do. I absolutely believe that climate change is real, and I believe there's a combination between man-made and natural. That being said, one of the biggest things we can do is get an energy policy, and we don't have one. Wind, solar, nuclear, hydro, geothermal, coal, siting, permitting, conservation. A true all-the-above approach, as I have. Professor Warren has a none-of-the-above approach. She's in favor of wind and solar. She's against the Keystone Pipeline, which will help create union. All you union guys listening out there, she's denying union jobs and non-union jobs, making sure we can get more of our energy on the world market to stabilize those costs that you're paying at the pump. And when's the last time we permitted a nuclear facility to make sure we can have that clean energy? I could go on and on, but right now the role is actually a balancing role, to find that balance, John, because you can't just have one or this or that. She's in favor of putting wind turbines in the middle of our greatest treasure down in the Nantucket Sound. I like Senator Kennedy before me, believe that's not right, because those ratepayers are going to pay a tremendous amount more in their daily costs, and that's not right.
Ms. Warren,
well,
90 seconds.
So Senator Brown says that he's about a balanced approach. He's not. He's about a rigged playing field. Our clean energy industry, an energy industry that works here in Massachusetts, has to fight uphill against the oil subsidies. That's what tilts the playing field. And Senator Brown has helped tilt it for the oil companies. That works against clean energy. The Keystone Pipeline, look, that's not going to produce nearly as many jobs as if we invested that same money in clean energy. That's where you produce real jobs, and that's where Massachusetts has a real advantage. But, you know, I just want to stop on this one for a minute, because I think this one is really important. Senator Brown has been going around the country talking to people, saying you've got to contribute to his campaign because it may be for the control of the Senate. And he's right. This race really may be for the control of the Senate. But what that would mean is, if the Republicans take over the Senate, Jim Inhofe would become the person who would be in charge of the committee that oversees the Environmental Protection Agency. He's a man who has called global warming a hoax. In fact, that's the title of his book. A man like that should not be in charge of the Environmental Protection Agency overseeing their work. And I just don't understand how we could talk about going in that direction.
Thank you. Rebuttal.
Thank you. You're not running against Jim Inhofe. You're running against me, Professor. And I am one of the original sponsors of the production tax credit for our green energy producers. The production tax credit makes our energy producers more competitive. And I supported that, and I'm in full favor of it. I support wind and solar and nuclear, hydro, geothermal, coal, siting, permitting, that true all-of-the-above approach, which you don't do. We need to step back from our dependence of foreign oil. We can't continue to give money to people that want to kill us. And I believe that we can do it together. And I'm going to make sure that if we're going to look at these so-called energy producers and attacking them, we need to sit down in a room in a bipartisan manner and find a way to do it so it's not getting passed over to the people at the pump.
Response.
So Senator Brown is for rigging the playing field. He's for making clean energy compete against a subsidized industry. Every time billions of dollars go to the oil company, it makes it harder to start on clean energy. But look, this really may be the race for control of the United States Senate. So it's not just about Senator Brown's vote. This is about the votes of all of the Republicans. Jim Inhofe, the senator, would become the person who would have supervision over the Environmental Protection Agency. He says global warming is a hoax. And that's what would happen. This matters in this race control of the Senate.
Go ahead.
John, yeah, listen, I'm the second most bipartisan in the United States Senate. I was recently named by Washingtonian Magazine as the least partisan senator. Can you imagine 100 Professor Warrens down there placing blame and raising taxes? Remember, the founder of the radical Occupy protest movement, and also the person who said, oh, by the way, you didn't build this on your own, folks. It was the roads and bridges that all of us put forth that so you could get your goods to market. That type of mentality, that lack of trying to work together, 54%. Every other member of our delegation right now is 90% and above. Professor Warren would be to the left of that. She would vote with her party 100% of the time, because when she was asked, she actually said, I don't know what I disagree with my party on. And that's not what we need in the United States Senate.
And equal time. And we're coming toward the end. So watch me for the cue. Okay?
So I think it's clear. This race is about whose side you stand on. Senator Brown has made it clear with his votes, subsidizing the oil industry, the billionaires, and saying taxes can go up on middle-class families. But remember, at the end of the day, this race may be for control of the Senate. Senator Brown can't have it both ways. He's out there raising money from Republicans all around the country, saying, if you give me money and I win, it means the Republicans can take control of the United States Senate.
And on that note, I'm afraid we are out of time. Mr. Brown, Ms. Warren, thank you very much. Thank you for joining us here on WBZ. Don't forget to watch WBZ News for complete wrap-up and reaction to this debate. Thank you very much for joining us. And also don't forget to go to the polls and vote on Election Day, November 6th. I'm John Keller. Thanks for watching.
WBZ News Radio 1030 and AARP present Campaign 2012, the senatorial debate.